My childhood, I remember being really fun and happy.
We are starting today's story with a daughter, Sophie, the only child to Joel and Melissa.
There was one stoplight very close to our house, and the light was just like notoriously long. And my parents would tell me if I like blew on the light, it would turn green. Looking back, it was definitely like they saw the countdown on the crosswalk and were like, oh, just blow on it now and it'll turn green. But I thought I was magical.
It was the three of them, and family life felt full where they lived in Los Angeles.
We were young. We were like a young, vibrant couple.
This is Melissa Gould. She was a screenwriter for TV. Joel worked in the music business and was a lover of sports. He was in his mid-40s when he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Sophie was just 8 then. Over the years, his symptoms and mobility worsened. And when Sophie was 13, Joel became suddenly ill. He spent about 3 weeks in the hospital and died. It would turn out from West Nile virus. Though Joel's health and quality of life had been deteriorating because of the MS, his death was sudden.
I couldn't believe that my person, I mean, Joel really was, we were so connected and we were just so in love and in like and on the same page about everything. I couldn't believe that my person was no longer here. Like, I really couldn't wrap my head around it.
When Joel died, Melissa was dealing with her own tremendous loss, and she was trying to help Sophie deal with hers. But of course, those experiences didn't look the same.
And it was, she was grieving so differently than I was. Like, I was crying. I was telling everybody I'd passed in the street that I was a widow. She didn't want to talk about it.
I tried to suppress a lot of emotion, I think, because I did not want to be the girl whose dad died. I didn't want anyone to look at me with pity.
So she grieved in a very quiet way, whereas I feel like I was grieving in a way that was very loud and eventually very public because of my writing.
Over the years, Melissa wrote and published essays about losing Joel, and last year told the whole story in a memoir called Widowish. It's about being thrust into grief and sorting through how to take care of your own urgent needs alongside those of your child, and how complicated it can be when grief takes different shapes in the family. From 10% Happier, this is Childproof, a show about our experience as parents raising kids. I'm Yasmin Khan. Today, we hear from a parent and child. Melissa and Sophie talk about grieving together and separately, and how their mother-daughter relationship is evolving into one between two adults. That's after the break.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome back. We're talking to a mother and daughter, Melissa and Sophie, about grief, how it's lasting, but also how it changes over time. Melissa still lives in Los Angeles. Sophie is now 22 and just graduated from college. We spoke to them separately at first. Our producer, Marissa Schneiderman, interviewed each of them before we brought mother and daughter together for a conversation. It felt important to hear from Sophie and Melissa on their own, even though the two are very close, as you'll hear, because very little about the way they processed Joel's death was similar. Plus, they had distinct and individual relationships with Joel, with as many separate memories of him as shared ones.
I wasn't ever like a lonely only child that I feel like some people would assume. I loved being with my dad. I remember he would take me to soccer and then we would go get this Mexican restaurant called Paquito Mas after every single practice. So that was our little like weekly ritual. But yeah, I also remember him and my mom just laughing together, like to the point where I would feel left out because I was like, what's so funny? And I could tell even from like a very young age that they were like very happy. I never heard my parents fight.
I mean, Joel had his things. Like he took Sophie to school every morning. He would take her to whatever like extracurricular. So he's the one that took her to her guitar lessons. He was a very active, hands-on dad. And they were really close and really tight.
Over time, Joel's MS symptoms altered family routines. They made long trips difficult, at times limited Joel's participation in activities he loved, like playing sports or standing at a concert to see his favorite bands play. Melissa says those changes introduced an element of mourning into their marriage early on, but that didn't prepare her for losing him.
I was grieving before I even knew I was grieving. So by the time Joel died, I think it was so surreal. Like, I really couldn't wrap my head around it. That feeling, in some ways, hasn't really left me, and he's been gone almost 9 years. Like, I'm still waiting for him.
Melissa says it's that sense of shock that propelled her to speak openly with friends about Joel's death, to announce to people, "I'm a widow." Sophie was just an eighth grader, unsure of how to move through her world after the sudden loss of her dad.
Being 13, I knew nobody else who had gone through something similar. If anything, it was like people had experience with their grandparents dying or like a pet.
We would get up, I would take her to school, which was Joel's job. I mean, that was already different from first thing in the morning. Like, okay, we're up and out.
I felt very isolated because nobody knew what to say and nobody really wanted to talk about it. And so I kind of just didn't talk about it.
I was bereft all day and I don't know how I did anything. I don't know how I paid doctor bills or returned phone calls or took care of our dogs. I was like just kind of sleepwalking, I feel like. But when I was with Sophie, I was present and I was strong.
I didn't want to stand out. Like at that time in eighth grade, like nobody wants to be labeled as like different. So I think that was the most challenging part, is seeing my mom's friends kind of rally around her.
She did see me cry. It's not like I was hiding from her. Like I wanted her to see me fall apart a little bit. I wanted her to know it was okay because she was so stoic.
Melissa tried to get Sophie to talk to other kids who had lost a parent, suggested a grief camp for children and therapy, among other things.
My mom and I had this book with like a daily quote about grief or something like that. I think it was gifted to us. And she, I don't even know if she found it helpful, but I think she thought it would help me if we did it every day. And I hated it. I like did not want to be reminded constantly of what had happened. My mom also was very outward in her grief. Like she would cry all the time. She would literally tell every single person that her husband had just died, like to the point where I was like embarrassed. And I was like, I do not want to be like around this like hysterical person all the time. And I think I kind of internalized that and was like, I'm just not gonna show any sort of emotion unless it's like really on my own terms.
Sophie did go to therapy, but she told us she didn't talk with the therapist about her father's death for 2 years. And while Melissa was more open with her grief, she was working through both losing her husband and her co-parent.
You know, your kid is always top of mind. But when you're widowed, I think there's a different weight of responsibility of being the only parent. I mean, everything from where should she apply to college to what should I make for dinner? Joel and I would discuss ad infinitum, every little detail. Like, should I put Sophie in the shorts or the leggings today? Like, we would discuss the same thing 100 times, 100 different ways, just to kind of come up with what we thought would be the right answer. And you don't have that, you don't have the validation when it's just you. There's not, Joel's not there saying, oh, hon, that's such a great idea. Or, hon, oh, that was the right thing. I'm so glad you chose that. I haven't had that since Sophie was 13. And I feel that missing all the time with everything. Really, absolutely everything.
Melissa and Sophie have been moving through some very formative years of parenting and growing up, just the two of them. When we spoke to them, Sophie was just 2 weeks away from her college graduation. They each remarked on how much they were feeling Joel's absence. The end of college was marking something new for them, too. Sophie's moving back home with her mom. That'll be another turn in their relationship after some time apart. And celebrating this milestone reminds Melissa of how significant it felt to get Sophie off to school 4 years ago.
When Sophie went away to college, I was so happy. I was almost exuberant. And that sounds so mean and so selfish, perhaps. But the truth is, I think she and I both needed a break. And part of my exuberance was because I was so excited that she was launched. And I was so excited because I knew it would be so meaningful to Joel, that Joel would have been so proud of her and so in awe. He was absent for her the entirety of her teenage years. She turned 13, and 6 months later, Joel died. He missed middle school graduation. He missed her starting a new school, her high school. He missed all of her new friends. He missed all of her piercings, her tattoo, her first job, her driving. Like, he missed all of that. So the fact that, like, she and I managed together to get her through those tricky and sometimes difficult high school years, and that she was finally off to college, like, it was a testament, I think, to both of us that she was off and running.
I think for me, not living with her makes me feel a little bit closer to her because I can call her way more. Like, I feel like I call her, like, if not every day, like every other day. Like, I feel like we talk a lot. But we still have this space where I can, like, hang up if she's, like, bugging me or whatever. But I am moving back in with her after college, so we'll see how that goes. But I would say our relationship is still very close. It's just kind of morphing into more of, like, an adult relationship.
Coming up.
I'm a big presence, so that makes sense to me, that that would continue even in our grief, that, like, I occupy a lot of space.
Not in a bad way.
I mean, the funny thing is, people interpret me as being very mellow.
Really? Oh my God, no.
I'm like, if they could talk to Sophie.
Melissa and Sophie talk together about how their relationship is morphing into one between two adults, and about Melissa's memoir. Working on it meant writing about being a mother, but also writing about Sophie, who's ready to have her own say in how her story goes. That's after the break.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Welcome back. Melissa lost her husband Joel when their daughter Sophie was 13 years old. Melissa and Sophie processed the loss in their own very distinct ways. Melissa grieved loudly and then publicly when her memoir Widowish came out last year. Sophie grieved mostly in silence as a young teen, not wanting to attract pity or stand out from her peers. We talked to them separately about what losing Joel was like for each of them and then brought them together. I wanted to know more about how their relationship has changed in the almost 9 years since Joel died and since the publication of Melissa's memoir. So we sat them down together in their respective places, Melissa at home in LA, Sophie still at college. I wanted to know, what had it been like for Sophie, who had guarded her privacy so vigilantly over the years, to have her family's story told in writing?
I mean, initially I was so excited for her, but now that the book is out, it's just a little bit of like a different feeling of kind of realizing that literally anybody in the world can like pick up a book and read about our life. And I know that my mom always is very like intentional with her writing and wants to make sure that it's her perspective and like her story. But I am obviously very intertwined in that. And I always have kind of, since the book came out, I've kind of been like, when is it going to be my turn to tell my story? So I'm really excited to be doing this because nobody ever asks me about me.
I mean, I did try and yes, the book obviously includes Sophie, like a huge part of it. Every page of it, you know, I mean, it's, but I really was intentional in making it my story. Like I would share things that Sophie and I had been through and experienced together, but it was always through my lens. The scenes in the book with Sophie were the hardest for me to write because I really was trying to tread lightly on revealing what her emotional life was.
Sophie, what was it like to read the book?
It was emotional for sure. I read it all in one sitting. I mean, I feel like in a way I got to learn about my dad and like I loved that part of it. It was also very interesting to see things from my mom's perspective that I didn't necessarily even know were happening during that time. There's a chapter about an argument I got into with my parents where I left the room and slammed the door. And then I guess my dad tried to go after me and he ended up falling. Like, I had no idea that happened. And that was really hard for me to read about because I couldn't help but feel like guilty about it. And I also just think, you know, I want to make a good impression on the reader. So I don't want anyone to be like judging me as like an angsty 12-year-old, you know. So that was that. I, you know, it's just interesting to read about yourself being portrayed when I had a whole different version of the events that I thought happened that night, you know.
Did you talk about it? Did you call your mom? What?
Well, I was after home reading it? When I oh, read yeah. it. I was home. I think I went into the other room and just started crying and I hugged her and I said, it was really good, Mom.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so supportive.
She is so supportive. Yeah. She's the best. I realized, like, writing about Joel and grief and our loss has been the most healing thing I could have ever done. Like, and I never saw that coming. So for Sophie, like, you know, I think you're seeing like the benefits of sharing the experience because there's healing in talking about it and in sharing it.
Yeah.
Have you been giving this much thought, Sophie, about when does your narrative get to come out and when do you get to have your say? Are you becoming more open with your own story and grief?
Yeah, I think so. As I've gotten older, I do want to talk about it more because I almost feel like what's happening now is I'm looking back on my life and I'm like, I was a baby when this happened to me. Like, what? Like, it's just surreal. And I think the kind of shock that my mom talks about experiencing, like, right after it happened is almost happening now to me, where I'm like looking around and I'm like, hello, like, my dad died when I was 13. Like, why is nobody talking about it? So it's like, I think now that I'm older, I do want to talk about it and like share more about my experience. I did an Instagram live last summer with an Instagram account that focuses on like the mental health of teenagers. And they had me on to talk about my experience with grief. And I feel like that was one of the first times I had really been asked about it instead of my mom. And I think that experience was like really fulfilling.
That was great. That was a great interview.
Just the feedback that I got from that too, of people like resonating with my story, felt really nice.
Because it wasn't your experience told through your mom's story.
Yeah, like it was my own telling.
Sophie is coming into her own, sharing more about losing her father from her perspective. I wondered how Melissa had come into her own too, as a parent, without Joel as her sounding board.
How did you, I guess, kind of have to learn as an only parent, how to make decisions on your own and feel confident in your parenting?
Sophie, do I make decisions?
My mom, she disagrees with me, is one of the most indecisive people I've ever met.
You say that, but
to the
I don't...
point, mom, because we will be like en route to a restaurant and she'll be like, oh, what about this place? Actually, I heard that they have really good salads. It's like, can we just stick to the plan?
Yeah, Sophie's thing is like, stick to the plan.
Yeah, I just think I'm more of a decisive person. Like once I have my mind set to something, it really doesn't shift.
How did you have to learn to make decisions again as a parent on your own?
I don't know that I've learned. It's very hard. I mean, Joel and I talked about everything. And I joke, you know, I'm a real like Jewish mother. And I think part of that is talking about the same one thing 1,000 times, 1,000 different ways. And Joel was a Jewish dad and would indulge me. If, you know, if we made a decision like, okay, we're going to leave Friday at noon. And then I have that, well, maybe we should leave Friday like at 2. And Joel would say, yeah, if we leave at 2, then maybe this, but maybe we should stick to leaving at noon. Like we could talk about that for 3 weeks. Like what time should we leave? You know, and I never felt like it was wrong or bad or silly to have the same conversation over and over and over again to come up with a final decision. So in Joel's absence, I have those conversations with myself. And it's very stressful and time consuming, but I've gotten better about it. I think at some point I just decided to trust myself and truly, it's the small decisions that will do me in. I always say it's like the small things in life, like the minutiae of life will do you in.
Right. That makes sense. If there's something of real consequence, you can have clarity.
But it's like silly. It's the silly stuff, you know, but it's
but I'm going to argue that it's not silly because parenting is full of minutiae. It is full of small
decisions. And I'm wondering, so let me phrase the question a little differently. How, when you became the parent, how would you say that your parenting expanded, being the only person there?
Well, I think in some ways I really tried to channel Joel, who was much calmer, much more reasonable, and more decisive than I am. And so I just tried to take strength from, like, what would Joel do? I ask myself all the time, even now, what would Joel do? What would Joel say? What would Joel feel about this? And it's harder and harder because the time that he's been gone is farther and farther away. So it's harder to channel him and feel him sometimes. But I just think I once I realized that he was gonna die, I really was acting as if I was okay, as if I could handle Joel's death, as if I could handle being an only parent. I just acted as if I could do it. And so I did.
And 6 months after Joel died, Melissa says something completely unexpected happened. She started dating someone. It was Sophie's former guitar teacher, who's referred to as Marcos in Melissa's book. Melissa says she thought maybe it would just be a fling. And if she had stopped to think about it, she and Marcos never would have gone out. But the relationship continued and felt positive. It made room for her grief. But it was really hard on Sophie.
I think shifting from, like, seeing your mom in a happy marriage to then seeing her date someone new, and the only reason that that man is there is because my dad isn't anymore, is really tough. And I really had a lot of anger towards both of them, honestly, for a long time. Now that I'm older, I am really happy that he's around. Like, I would never want my mom to not have somebody. Like, I think moving on is something that is, like, difficult no matter what the situation is. But, like, in our case, like, I don't want my mom to be, like, this grieving widow mourning and wearing black for the rest of her life. I'm happy that she's, like, moved on and is, like, happy with somebody else. And I also think Marcos is a really great guy and, like, has done so much for both of us and is, like, so happy to be there. It's making me emotional.
Oh. Sophie, that's so sweet, everything you're saying. I will say that part of the reason that I fell for him and am still with Marcos and have him in my life and in our lives is because he is so comfortable in accepting that Joel is so much a part of our lives still.
Yeah, like he's never made either of us feel like we can't talk about him or that, like, there's not room for both of them.
And Marcos would talk about Joel frequently and easily, and he still does. And I'm just amazed by it, you know, and I continue to write about it. Like, yes, Widow Wish is out in the world, but, like, I also continue to have written so many essays, and so many of them are about this dynamic I have between my boyfriend and my husband. Even though my husband is no longer alive, but he's still very much the person I write about and feel compelled to write about, along with my boyfriend, Marcos. I also want to acknowledge that I know how difficult it must have been for Sophie at the time, and even more up until recently. It's got to be weird. I think because Marcos is still around, it's kind of like, okay, you know, you've come to, like, an acceptance. And
yeah, he's just, like, part of our life now. I mean, all of this stuff just all brings up a lot of emotion. So yeah. I'm surprised at myself that this is, like, what made me cry.
Will Marcos be at your graduation?
Yes.
So he's been a part of these milestones.
Very. I mean, he taught me how to drive. He was at my high school graduation. He's going to be at my college graduation now. He's like a big part of my life for sure. And I appreciate having him as like a good male role model that like he's not my dad. And like he's never tried to do that or like parent me in any way. Like I feel like we've kind of come together more as like a unit, even though it's very clear always that it's like me and my mom and then Marcos. It's never like him and my mom and I'm there.
Right.
So I've always really appreciated that too.
I'm so glad that you feel that way.
Does he know this? Does he know you feel this way?
I don't know.
When he listens to this podcast.
Yeah.
Melissa and Marcos don't live together. 8 years later, they're still in a relationship and still leading independent lives. So when Sophie moves back in with Melissa this summer, it'll be just mother and daughter under one roof. Other than that, they haven't given much thought to what this next phase together will bring.
She always jokes that I'm her favorite roommate, so I guess that's nice.
Yep. I mean, my hope always eternally for Sophie is that she's happy. You know, that's really just, I think we all want that for our kids. I want her to feel happy and confident and comfortable in her own skin. And I want her to feel success and joy, whatever that looks like for her. You know, like that's really what I want. And I think it comes out as like me being a nervous, neurotic mom because, you know, I just can't contain how amazing I think she is, you know, like, and I just feel like I can't wait for the world to see that.
What struck me about talking to Melissa and Sophie was that as much as their story was about grief and how different their needs were, it was also about how a parent and child learn about each other and how grief challenges a family to tease out those lessons and grow up together. This is our last episode of Childproof here at 10% Happier. We think that parent experiences are important and that these stories deserve to be told. You can go back and listen to our episodes anytime. 10% Happier's podcast team is still hard at work on our flagship show called 10% Happier and working on a new season of our show about emotions and the human condition called More Than a Feeling. We hope you'll keep following our work over there. The Childproof team is Marissa Schneiderman, Palace Shaw, Stacia Brown, Kimmy Regler, Jen Poyant, and me. Special thanks to Opera Sussman for help with this episode. Scoring and mixing by the incredibly patient and skilled Joe Tisdall of Ultraviolet Audio. Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs wrote our excellent theme. Connor Donahue is our manager of technical operations and all-around mensch. Childproof is a production of 10% Happier.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Childproof ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.